not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
Well, this is a big, big day.
Oh, it's huge.
This, of course, is the Pi Day of the century. Pi Day, of course, is March 14th, because 314 are the first three digits of pi. But it turns out that on 2015, the first five digits of pi are 3.1415. Mm-hmm. So this only occurs once every century. Pi Day of the century. But it even gets better than that.
How much better could it get?
Better than that. The next three digits are 926, which means that pi minute of the century occurs at 926 during the show.
And I think we may have something special planned.
And it even gets better than that. The next two digits are 53. So at 926.53, we will be the pi second of the century.
Wow.
Right on the show. I'm really pumped up for this because, actually, I've been waiting. I've been doing Tech Talk since 2000. I have been waiting 15 years for this day.
That is amazing.
And I made certain that the show occurred between 9 and 10 o'clock so we could have the pi second of the century.
This will be one for the record books.
Oh, yeah. It's a very big deal. And there's some other news that came out. The Apple Watch, they finally revealed what it was all about.
With can't wait
Apple
to hear what you
Watch.
Have to say about that.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going on sale until April, mm-hmm. but at least they sort of gave a hint as to what the whole Apple Watch deal was about. This week we're going to feature the new CEO of Microsoft. He's been at the helm at Microsoft for a year. Satya Nadella, he's from India. He's been there for a year, and he's made some really good changes. People within the company are really happy. Developers outside of the company are very happy. Everybody's happy except Wall Street because the revenues aren't going up like Wall Street would like. But I think he is turning that ship around, and I'm glad to see that Microsoft is going to have a future in this world of cloud technology. We'll talk a little bit about how the cell phone companies can track you.
Mm-hmm.
That's of course always a big issue, and we'll mention how PayPal is trying to check out some fraudsters. And of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Giant.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh yeah, boy, it's heavy. I tell you, our email comes with the heaviest electrons I've ever seen. I think our electrons must have hooked up with some extra Higgs bosons to get more mm-hmm. mass because they are really, really heavy. They are really bulked up. They are heavy. I think they got some extra Higgs bosons on there. We got an email from Mary Wilson. Dear Dr. Schertz, over a year ago, I contacted this group and showed great interest in attending their meetings. And I went in another direction and never went to their meetings. But this is what happens. I get these calendar reminders every Friday. I've tried various things that seem to remove these calendar notices, yet they still keep coming back. I'm on an iMac running Yosefite with all the updates installed. How can I make them stop? Thanks, Mary Wilson. Well, Mary, I checked around. I don't know of any viruses that are running on Yosemite that actually would do this. There are a couple of things that could happen. It could be that they put on your calendar a recurring event, so you delete today's event, but if you don't delete all future events that are recurring, they'll keep coming back. I've also did some research. Some people have problems that their calendar in the iMac is synced with other calendars, and they may have put these events on other calendars. So maybe you're syncing to a Google calendar or to Maybe you're sometimes you might be syncing to a Facebook calendar, and you might pulling in you might be pulling in these events from other calendars and getting a notice. So I would check for any syncing, calendar syncing, and you might go to those other calendars. And I'd also make certain that you have not deleted all recurring events in the calendar. I thought maybe it could be a virus. I didn't see any evidence of a virus that has that particular kind of behavior, but I hope that syncing tip helps you. We got an email from Arnie in Crownsville, Maryland. Arnie's one of our regular listeners. Hi, Dr. Schertz. Could you go over mobile hotspots? Mobile hotspots can some operate up to 10 devices, and can they handle a mix of both Android and Apple devices? I'm thinking of buying a mobile hotspot, which would be the Verizon MiFi mobile hotspot for our iPads for a trip across the country. The truckers apparently use this, but it's expensive. It's a 1 to 2 year contract. I have to pay $50 a month. It seems kind of steep. Also, I'd like to know, what about using a hotspot at home in the case that you don't have good internet access, like you've got DSL, but it's not really good connection speed? Is the mobile hotspot an option? Well, let's talk about hotspots, Arnie. I use them a lot. If you're going on a road trip, I just use the hotspot on your cell phone. See, your cell phone's got a built-in hotspot. You can basically activate it. And so I would use it. If you've got an iPhone, you can use it. You can use the hotspot. Now, what the carriers do, they like to charge you $10 a month to activate the hotspot. Well, I went to Verizon and I said, look, I want to get a data sharing plan for up to 5 devices. And so I got that. And so we share data across 5 devices. And one of the devices is just the mobile hotspot. And it turned out that when I changed data plans and I went to the data sharing plan, my bill went down.
Huh.
It was actually cheaper when I went in there. So the thing, you want to go back to Verizon periodically, and just because they lower prices, but then they don't tell you unless you go in and say, hey, I want that new plan. So I got the new plan, and so my bill went down, and I can just turn on the mobile hotspot on my iPhone or on Marianne's iPhone. So when I'm traveling in the car, I just turn on my mobile hotspot, and I can use that for surfing the web with my laptop, or I can use that for an iPad that doesn't have 3G connection, and so. I would not buy a mobile hotspot to go across the country. I just use the hotspot on your iPhone and go to your carrier and get it activated with some sort of plan where it doesn't really cost you anymore. Now, when I'm using the mobile hotspot on my iPhone, I don't like watch Netflix. I don't stream video because, of course, you're eating up data. So I kind of watch that. Now let's talk about if you're at home, though, it really doesn't make sense to use a mobile hotspot if you want to replace your internet connection because you're not always home. There may be other people that want to have internet access. So you really need a hotspot that's always there no matter who's there. And that particular Verizon Jetpack 4G Lite mobile hotspot really got great reviews. I mean, it got good reviews even if it operates just on a battery pack. I mean, it had good battery life and it got very good reviews. The thing is, with a mobile hotspot, you've got a little more powerful Wi-Fi radio, so you've got bigger range, so you could probably cover the house. So, at $50 a month, that may be okay. I mean, one of the complaints about that particular Verizon hotspot is it's a great device, got great battery life, but the data plan's really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe they would let you include that hotspot in a multi-device data plan, and you just share the data across all devices. So you may be able to package it with your overall plan and get a better deal. But I think hotspots are really the way to go. I use them a lot. I went out to we had an offsite. Stratford had an offsite one time, and I needed internet access for my laptop. And the internet access in this particular hotel, in this particular conference room, was so bad that I just couldn't get any kind of responsive. We were playing videos for this offsite. I just couldn't get the videos to play without buffering. So I just turned on my hotspot, and there was 4G there. I connected my laptop to my hotspot, and I had great bandwidth for the whole time. And I ended up, because internet was so bad, the whole room there, they were all attached to my hotspot,
mm-hmm.
and everything worked fine. And I don't think they really used that much data that day, but I think that was a good question. My sister also, she did a road trip recently, and she had the same question. So she activated the hotspot on her iPhone. Worked great. She
cool.
went across the whole country and had no trouble with internet access. So we got an email from Reverend David Griesemer. Would you say that?
Griesemer, maybe.
Griesemer. David Griesemer. He's with the Landover Hills Baptist Church. He said, "Dear Tech Talk, you mentioned sites where you can get pictures." The other was talking about like iStock photo, like royalty-free pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And then also you could upload these pictures for others to buy. Could you send me these sites? Thanks. How does one sell photos on these sites? Thanks again. Great show, Reverend Geisemer. Well, here, you know, the five sites that I gave last time, iStockPhoto.com, that's what I use a lot, Shutterstock.com, GettysImage.com, Fotilia.com and BigStockPhoto.com. You can go to the TechTop webpage and you can look up last week's show and all those will be listed. Now, I've really only used iStock personally. Now, if you want to sell images on iStock, you want to go to their contributor lounge and say, and so they just do a Google search for iStock Photos Contributor Lounge. They'll take you to that lounge. And what they do, you have to submit three pictures. And they decide whether, and you want to submit your three best pictures, and they decide whether your photographs are of the caliber that they would want to have on their site. So if they approve your three pictures, then they'll approve you as a contributor, and then you can start uploading pictures, and they have some sort of revenue sharing. All these sites have different revenue sharing deals for contributors. If you say, "I'm an exclusive iStock photo photographer," they give you a bigger percentage because then people can only find your photos on their site. So I think this is really a good way if you want to get into the, you know, start selling your pictures. At least you can put your toe in the water to see whether people like your work, and then you can go from there. It's a great question. Glad you enjoy the show. We got an email from Alice in Wonderland. "Dear Dr. Schertz, how did this spammer change the actual email address of mine to read friend? Now, I created a rule in mail preferences to move their address, which is after the at symbol, like dailyresourceexperts.com. I wanted to move it so it would go automatically into trash. But the problem is they keep changing the email address that they send this spam from. So my filter doesn't really work. I mean, my rule doesn't work because then I have to get a new rule for the next address. And so this is very frustrating. I don't know how to stop these guys. Now, I don't know how we can do this thing. I know that Microsoft and Apple have found a way to stop spam, but I don't know how to stop this spammer. Thanks, Alice." Well, Alice, actually, spammers always change their source email address. They just, because the thing is, email does not have validated email addresses. You can put anything in the from line. You can put anything, and it's not checked.
Mm-hmm.
Because when email protocol was invented many, many years ago, they just assumed that, well, people were honest, and they wouldn't put in a from address unless it was really the correct address. So they just didn't check. There are future protocols coming out that are going to validate the from address, but right now it's not validated at all, so they can put anything they want, and they just keep changing it. So you can't really filter on the from address. Now what Google does and what many of these spam filters do, they use crowdsourcing. So like when you're in Gmail, you see something that's spam, you just tell Google it's spam. And so if they get a lot of users that say, "Hey, this particular thing is spam," then Gmail automatically puts it in spam, and then they have sort of heuristic filters. These are heuristic means they train them based on the characteristics or the patterns of that particular spam. And so over time, their spam filters get better and better and better because of feedback from users. Now, in your case, you're just setting up a spam filter on your own, but it's really hard to match that. Now, I would ask, are you using any sort of spam filter on your machine? If you sign up for spam services, What you want to do is you want to notify them whenever something is spam coming to you, and you can train the filter over time to get better and better and better, which would be what I would recommend in your case. We got an email from June Acuna in Burke. Dear Doc and Jim, please discuss cell phone security and how safe are apps that you download to your phone. And how about side channel emissions from computer in public places? Mm. See the attached article about that. Thank you, June Cunha, Burke, Virginia. Well, here's a quick summary of the article. That was a good article. I'd seen that a few weeks ago, and I put off talking about it, but I'll talk about it now. They've done research that computers actually emit signals. So you could be in suppose you were in an airport and you were working on your laptop, but you weren't connected to the internet. It turns out that your computer, because it's actually moving electrons around, is going to send out radiation relating to the kind of processing that it's doing. And people have detected this radiation. It's called side channel emissions. And so what researchers are now doing are trying to figure out whether these side channel emissions are giving them enough information so they can actually see what you're doing. They can look at what keys you're pressing. They can see what you're processing. They're trying to see exactly how vulnerable you are. And the initial research says that these side channel emissions are pretty significant, so you ought to watch out for it. So they said that they can put up an antenna in a briefcase. So somebody could put a briefcase right beside your laptop, and it could sit there and just pick up all the side channel emissions. So, I mean, I think this is a pretty remote risk, really, unless you're like a nuclear scientist working with top secret data and some Russian spy is following you around. But I think by and large, for the average Joe Blow, these side channel signals are not going to be that significant. There's another kind of emission that comes out of computers. This is acoustic emissions, because your power supply, there are capacitors and things in your laptop. When you charge and discharge a capacitor, it moves a little bit, and you get kind of a clicking noise. And they can pick up the clicking noise from these capacitors or inductors. And that clicking noise, probably it relates to power supply, but it is specific to different kinds of machines. So they can recognize the kind of computer that you're using from this acoustic emission. But I don't think these are really great threats. I think there are bigger threats than those.
Really?
For instance, let's talk about apps. Android apps are not really scrutinized very much. Pretty much anybody can upload an app to the Android app store, and they're not really checked out that much. And so there are problems on occasion with Android apps because they're not really screened that well. Apple apps are screened a lot more, have received a lot more scrutiny. So I'd say from an app security point of view, Apple apps are probably more secure than Android apps. So when you're downloading an app, this was really a very good question. I would just download an app that's got good reviews. People are talking about it. It's widely used. I would not download an unknown app that you really don't know what's going on. Like you say, let me try this new screensaver or something, and then you don't even know anything about it, and there could be something in that. So you just want to be mindful, especially with the Android apps, what you're downloading. Now there's another issue with cell phones. Now the good news is cell phone signals are encrypted. You know, they're very good, strong encryption. So it's hard for people to crack in the cell phone encryption unless they've got a man in the middle where they can basically connect to you. They can de-encrypt it in the man in the middle because they set up the encryption, the encrypted link, and then they forward it on to the whoever you're calling. So this man in the middle attack you could do with rogue cell phone towers. It turns out that for the past several years, there have been rogue cell phone towers showing up around the country.
Wow.
And people are saying, well, you know, who's actually owning these rogue cell phone towers? Now, actually, people are speculating that the U.S. government's putting them out to just spy on us.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, other governments might be putting them out there. So, you know, so the rogue cell phone towers could be a problem with this man-in-the-middle attack, so that would be just another thing to worry about. Then
Great.
The final thing that I to worry about, since I'm just one bushel basket of bad news, the final thing to worry about would be when you go to a hotspot, like a Wi-Fi hotspot like at Starbucks, which is unencrypted. People can sit around and they can just sniff out your passwords like, you know, till the cows come home. So whenever I go into a hotspot, I always activate a VPN, virtual private network. It sets up an encrypted data stream so that even though the Wi-Fi network is unencrypted, my VPN is encrypted. Now I use ExpressVPN, and that supports up to 5 devices. So when I use the VPN for my laptop, for my iPad, for my iPhone, ExpressVPN, I think I pay $8 a month for that. And I love this VPN because I can go to India and I can watch Netflix movies. They're not allowed in India, but of course, since my VPN server is in America, Netflix thinks I'm in America, so they just ship all the Netflix movies to me there in New Delhi. And so it's very, very convenient for that usage, as well as for surfing the web while you're at McDonald's or at Starbucks. So those are all the things to worry about with your cell phone, June. Great question. We got an email from Nyan in Atlanta. Dear Doc and Jim, what's the difference between save and run when downloading a program? I get this question all the time, and I'm never sure what to use. Love the podcast, Nyan in Atlanta. Well, this is the thing. This comes up a lot, and people are never really sure, should I run it, should I save it? Well, if you select run, it's actually a two-step process. The file you've requested is downloaded to your machine, but it's downloaded like to a temporary memory location. And then as soon as it's downloaded to that temporary memory location, it's run. In other words, it's just like you double-clicked on the file and you activated the file. It runs and does the installation. Now, that temporary location is either in browser's cache or a temporary folder or one of your Windows temporary folders, and it's not meant to really keep, so over time, it's just going to be deleted because it's in a temporary folder and it's a file not meant to be kept. On the other hand, if you click save, it saves it to a particular folder. Now, it could go into your documents folder. It could go into a downloads folder, but it's actually saved to a folder. And the idea is that it's going to be saved on your hard drive forever. It's not going to be deleted because it's not a temporary folder. And then if you save it, then you've got to go to the folder where it's saved and you've got to double click on it to activate it. So you've got to basically run it rather than you've just downloaded it and then you have to run it once it's downloaded. Now, the third option is save and run. Now, this way, it saves it to a folder that is not temporary, that you select, either My Documents or Downloads, and then it automatically runs it. You don't have to go through and do the second step. So if you're going to download something just once and never use it again, just select Run, because you just as soon get it, you know, why store it on your hard drive? But if you want to keep whatever you're downloading indefinitely, you would click Save. If you want to keep whatever you're downloading and also immediately run it, like if you're installing something, you do save and run. So it's a good question. I think a lot of people aren't really quite sure what to click, so they just click randomly at something and hope it's going to work. Listen, we love your emails.
Okay, finish that.
Email
but I don't think we go to a break right now.
Oh, huh?
Because we are so close to pie time.
Okay, so close to pie time. 9:26. Yeah, listen, mm-hmm. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We love all your emails.
All right. So let's just start talking about pie then.
So this is the thing. This is Pi Day. Now, pi, of course, has been around for a long time. Came with the Greeks, you know, we're trying to calculate pi. Pi is the ratio of the circumference of a circle to the diameter. And the Greeks had hoped that it would be a rational number, like a fraction. So they hoped that it would be 22 over 7. But 22 over 7 isn't right. And it turns out that pi cannot be expressed as a fraction because it is irrational. Mm-hmm. That's why I love it. I just love anything that's irrational. And so it was just a big problem. And so they finally decided, okay, we're going to accept this irrational number. So pi's been around for a good long while. Now, Pi Day was organized by Larry Shaw in 1988 at the San Francisco Exploratorium, where he worked as a physicist. On that first Pi Day, everybody walked around in a circle at the Exploratorium. After they walked around in a circle for a while, they all ate pie. On March 12, 2009, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a non-binding resolution recognizing March 24th as National Pi Day. You know, I'm glad that Congress is really on this important stuff.
Because, you know, there's nothing else going on.
No, I tell you, they can really hammer through that legislation when they have to.
Yeah, really.
Now, on Pi Day in 2010, Google represented the Google Doodle celebrating the holiday with a word Google laid over images of circles and pi symbols. Google did nothing this Pi Day.
You're kidding.
To the Google homepage. They didn't do a stinking thing.
This is a big deal.
I'm just really disappointed. Now, Pi Day is celebrated at Massachusetts Institute of Technology. They send out their application decision letters on Pi Day. The town of Princeton has a big celebration on Pi Day because, of course, March 14th is also Albert Einstein's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And Albert Einstein lived in Princeton for 20 years working at the Institute. So they, on Pi Day, they have a pie-eating contest. They also have a recitation contest where people have to recite all the as many digits of pi as they can. And there's an annual Einstein look-alike contest.
I would not like to win that contest.
So, I tell you, I'm just really pumped.
Do you have any special plans for today?
No, well, I don't know. I'm probably going to have to eat pie. I think there's...
Will it be sweet or savory, do you think?
I think it's going to be sweet pie. Mm-hmm. I'm going to enjoy that. I'm going to savor every piece of that pie.
We're just about to count down to actual pie second here. Because
now, we're at the pie minute now. 9:26 is the pie minute. This is a highlight. We're now up to 3.14159 26, and now we want to get the next two digits correct. So we're going to come up to the pi second.
And we're going to count this down here in just a few moments.
Right.
That's right.
And the pi second there is going to be at 53 seconds of this minute.
And then after that, we have a special song that we're going to play.
Yes, indeed.
Don't
this
we?
Is. I'm really pumped up over this.
Okay, we're almost there, Doc.
Okay. I tell you, this is like the excitement in the studio is just electric.
It's the electrons have sped
this
up.
This is really the first time that national that this pi minute of the century has been celebrated in the studio here.
Right now, there we go.
There it is. The pi second of the century, 3.14.
This is it. You and
9.27.53.
You and I will never see this again.
We're not going to see this again for another 100 years.
Although, I don't know. You seem like the kind of guy that might be cryogenically saved you could be around for the next one.
Well, I was thinking of just pre-recording Tech Talk for the next 100 years so we could actually do it now and it would just come on the air in 100 years.
Well, that'd be great. We could do that if there's still radio then.
If there's still radio then.
I wonder, you know what? You should do that one day. You should take a look at what could be in 100 years on the technology.
I'll tell you, I love pod because it is irrational.
There you go.
And irrational behavior is really some of the most interesting behavior on the world, mm-hmm. in the world.
All right, well, let's play this song now. Here, Dr. Scherz was kind enough to find this song in commemoration of the day. As soon as we get it queued up. And here we go.
A long, long time ago, long before the Super Bowl and things like lemonade, the Hellenic Republic was full of smarts. And a question resting on the Grecian hearts was, what is the circumference of a circle? But they were set on rational numbers, and it ranks among their biggest blunders. They worked on it for years, and confirmed one of their biggest fears. I can't be certain if they cried when irrationality was realized, but something deep within them died the day they discovered pie.
This is like, you're the Casey Kasem of pie
right.
songs, let me
it
tell
is.
You. Counting down.
Oh, yeah.
6535897932384062.
There we go.
Yep. That's quite something else, Doc.
That it is. I'll tell
you. You could actually, if you wanted to, you could go to YouTube. And what would you just Google or look for the pie song? Is that what everybody should look for?
Pie song, P-I song, pie song. And then there's just a whole bunch of pie songs out there.
And in fact, we're going to take us to break with another from the Dr. Scherz pie song collection.
Here they are singing every digit of pie. This is a 1 hour song. We're going to cut it short, though.
Yes, we shall. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio. 1500 is too many numbers. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1039 FM HD2. Stand by. We will be back with Profiles in IT right after these gals.
5342117067982148081321382. If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University Innovative Approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University and just super excited over Pi Day.
Oh, I know.
And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Satya Narayana Nadella. Satya Narayana Nadella is the third CEO of Microsoft and is responsible for moving Microsoft from a Windows-first company to a cloud-first company. Satya Narayana Nadella was born August 19, 1967, in Hyderabad, India. He attended Hyderabad Public School, Begumpet, from 1978 to 1984. Satya was a boarder at that school. He hung out at school. He was active in cricket and football. He also liked debating. He was an active debater. He was an above-average student. They said he wasn't like super exceptional, but he's above-average student. He had lots of friends, and he was very balanced. He had a huge circle of friends there at the Hyderabad Public Schools. In 1988, he received a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from Manipal Institute of Technology. Now, Nadella said he'd always wanted to build things. He knew computer science was his true passion that he wanted to pursue, but that computer science wasn't available at Manipal Institute of Technology, so he majored in electrical engineering, which was the closest thing as he could get. In 1990, Nadella received a Master of Science in Computer Science from the University of Wisconsin. Now, after he graduated with his master's degree from University of Wisconsin, he went to work for Sun Microsystems as a member of its technology staff. Then in 1992, he was accepted at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. But that same time, he also received a job offer from Microsoft. He didn't want to pass up either opportunity, but he decided to start the job at Microsoft. He accepted the position at business school, but said, I'm going to defer my enrollment for a couple of years because I want to start at Microsoft. So in 1995, he enrolled in Booth's school, the Chicago School of Business weekend MBA program. That meant that he flew to Chicago on the weekends for 2.5 years. He received his MBA in 1997. Now, he held multiple positions at Microsoft. He was VP of the business division. He was corporate VP of business solutions and search and advertising platform group. He was the executive VP of the cloud and enterprise group. So he was sort of moving around to different areas within Microsoft. And this really prepared him for his CEO position. In 2007, he was promoted to senior VP of R&D for the online services division. In 2011, he was promoted to president of Microsoft Server and Business Tools. And he led a transformation that moved from client services to cloud infrastructure and services. And this is really the new direction for all the companies, particularly if Microsoft wants to compete with Google and Apple. They've got to get into cloud services. He's credited with bringing Microsoft's database, Microsoft Server, Microsoft's developer tools to its Azure cloud. In 2013, Nadella's base salary was $700,000 for a total compensation of stock bonuses worth around $7.6 million. So he's doing all right
yeah.
there. Yeah, he's doing fine. On February 4th, 2014, Nadella became Microsoft's third CEO. In his first year, he has moved away from Steve Ballmer's Windows first focus, which was Windows everything and to heck with anything else, and he was, which was very narrow-minded, short focus on near-term revenue at the expense of long-term potential. So he moved away from Windows first, and he started, emphasizing cloud. Like, for instance, he released a Microsoft Office for the iPad. Ballmer didn't want to do that. It had been developed for over a year, and finally Nadella said, "Look, you know, let's support all platforms. Let's not be so biased toward Windows." So he released it, and they started releasing more and more products for alternate platforms. This because that draws more people into the Microsoft cloud. That's Nadella's view. In 1992, Nadella married Anna Pama. Now, many think that this was a love marriage, because this is when you're in India. Is it a love marriage or is it an arranged marriage? This is the thing. Many think it was a love marriage, but actually it was a little bit of both. It turned out that Anna Pama was the daughter of a gentleman who worked in the government service with her father. So it was a close family friend. So I think it was a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
And they're quite happily married. They have three children, a son and two daughters. They live in Bellevue, Washington. Now, Nadella is an avid reader of American and Indian poetry. He's also interested in cricket. He played cricket when he was in school, and it was a huge passion for him then when he was in school and he played cricket, as well as now watching cricket. He mentioned that he learned teamwork and leadership from his cricket experience, so he felt that really helped him develop. His first year at Microsoft, I think, has been an enormous success. He oversaw layoffs where they had to lay off non-critical staff, for instance, like with the note from Nokia and overlap with Nokia and other places. But he kept the core staff of highly, highly motivated technologists. He launched multiple new products. He embraced all the platforms, not just Windows. He made Microsoft cloud-centric. And this is the thing, there have been a lot of surveys. He made Microsoft exciting again for developers. And he also made it exciting again for employees. He ended all the bitter feuds that Steve Ballmer had with Oracle and Apple and Google. I mean, remember that Scroogle campaign that Steve Ballmer got where they don't be Scroogled by Google?
Mm-hmm.
He just got rid of all that stuff. He just said, let's just work on being the best technology. Just
do what we do.
Just do what we do, the best that we can be. And I'm telling you, the mood at Microsoft has changed dramatically. Now, Wall Street says, well, wait a minute here. Windows revenues are dropping off. What are you going to do for us? I think the long-term potential of Microsoft is brighter than it's ever been since Nadella's been in charge. And I think they're going to see a revenue recovery, and Wall Street will eventually be happy with this. But I'm glad to see that they put a man in charge of Microsoft who had a vision for where Microsoft could go. So there you go. Everything you want to know about Satya Narayana Nadella, the third CEO of Microsoft.
Hope you were paying attention, because free food is riding on your knowledge coming up on the pop quiz here on Tech Talk Radio, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business.
Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Classroom of the Airways. And of course, the classroom, we're going to have an assessment, which will be a pop quiz. If you get the right answer to the pop quiz, you'll win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room. You'll also get an A-plus for the session. Now, earlier in the show, we were talking about Satya Narayana Nadella, the third CEO of Microsoft. When he was in school, he played a particular sport, and that sport is still one of his major passions. What sport did Nadella play while he was going to Hyderabad, a public school?
Well, if you know the answer to that question, you need to get it to us quickly. And the way to do that is by picking up your plain old telephone system line, your POTS phone, and dialing, if you're calling from West or Hyderabad, India, it's 877-936-9333. East of Chicago, Illinois, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, everybody else, everywhere else, on the wildcard line, it's 877-936-9333. But I'm sure you have a higher-tech idea
in order to contact us. If you're calling in from the Taj Mahal there in Agra, India, you can reach us on Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded directly to you to the studio free of charge.
Very good. Dial now. Dial carefully.
Dial now.
You don't want to wake anybody up.
That's right.
On this Pi Day.
Very, very careful. Well, another cybersecurity flaw has been discovered, because I'm just one big bag of bad news here today. Now, this article was suggested by Arnie, a longtime listener. Now, researchers discovered another flaw that threatens millions of Internet users. It goes by the clever acronym called FREAK, which stands for Factoring Attack on RSA Export Keys. Now, this bug affects secure socket layer protocols that are used to encrypt data as it's transmitted over the Internet, and potentially puts at risk private information sent over the Internet, including passwords, banking, and credit card information. Now, this is where FREAK came from. Do you remember back in the 1990s when the government said we can't export high-power encryption software overseas? We had to keep it all in the U.S. So any browsers that were sent overseas, they were restricted to a 512-bit code encryption. This is from the early 90s. Now, it turns out that 512 bits of a code encryption can be cracked fairly easily. Of course, that's what the government wanted. They want to be able to crack any secured information coming from other countries. Now, you know, people didn't like it, but they sent it out there anyway. Now, in the U.S., we were using 1024-bit encryption, which would take millions of PCs about a year to crack the code, so that was pretty good. Well, after a few years, the government decided, you know, this is probably a bad idea to have some software that has a bad encryption. So they basically changed the rule, and we could start shipping out, browsers that would support 1024-bit encryption. But the problem is this old 512-bit encryption was still out there. So many of the web servers support both levels of encryption, both 1024 as well as 512. And it's possible to set up a man-in-the-middle attack and trick your browser to use 512-bit encryption, which is easily cracked. And they said this is actually a problem. Now, the good news is that Google Chrome isn't susceptible. It will not switch to 512-bit. Now, older Android browsers are vulnerable, and Apple's, this is a big problem, Apple's Secure Transport is vulnerable. That is a big deal. Apple Secure Transport, which you know is vulnerable to this freak attack. So this is actually quite interesting in that this announcement came out this week, the same week that the FBI director James Comey announced his desire that he'd like software developers to put in back doors so that U.S. intelligence agencies could decrypt data for national security reasons. This is the same bad policy, trying to repeat the same bad policy kind of thing that we had back in the 90s. It was a bad thing to come out. Now, the good news is that we expect security patches soon. Apple, this is the biggest one, Apple expects to have a security patch for Apple computers and iPhones by mid-March. So it should be out next week. So you won't be vulnerable too much longer.
Good. We have somebody on the phone to talk to. Let us go to Rockville, Maryland. This is Lewis calling. Lewis, how you doing, sir?
Pretty good. How are you?
Very good. Lewis, Dr. Schertz, if you would please ask the question.
Yes. Satya Narayana Nadella, third CEO of Microsoft, went to school in Hyderabad. When he was in Hyderabad, what sport did he play in school?
Cricket.
That is correct.
You're correct, Dad.
Correct.
Lewis. Good.
You win
good.
Two tickets to fine dining. This Scuffia down here.
What's that, Doc?
I want to talk to you.
I'm sorry. We couldn't make that out, sir.
That's very nice.
Lewis, have you ever played cricket before?
No.
No, you never played great. Well, Lewis, thank you for calling. Hang on. Andrew will be right with you in just a moment and take your information, and we will get that prize right out to you in just a few days here. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. We shall return shortly with more of Tech Talk here this Saturday morning on Federal News Radio. We'll be right back.
I don't know what he was saying.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Now let's talk about a little secret that your cell phone company doesn't really want you to know.
Okay.
They're actually tracking you.
Of course they are.
Now, why would they even care about tracking you? They really don't care what you're up to, but they want to sell your data to companies so that they can have targeted advertising. Now, AT&T actually sort of fessed up, and they said, look, if you pay an extra $29 a month, we won't share your data.
Nice.
Yeah, that's... I don't think they should have shared it anyway. But,
right,
but
and now they charge you not to share it is even more.
Then they're charging you not to share it. So this is what they do. The cell phone, they actually track where your information goes in, but you can turn it off on your cell phone. So like in the case of your iPhone, if you want to turn this so they can't track you, you want to go to Settings, and then you scroll down, you see something called Privacy. Click on Privacy. Then clear down at the bottom of the privacy thing, there's something called limit ad tracking. You want to turn this to on. Then that will limit the ad tracking that they have going on in the iPhone. Then right below that, there's something called reset the advertising identifier. So they have been tracking you, and they kind of know your identifier. So you click on that, then you have a new identifier. So you can become at least anonymize yourself for a little bit longer. And so it's a little bit more difficult for them to track you. In the Android Android phone, you want to turn off the Google Ad ID system. Now, you don't go to your Android settings in that case. You go to the Google Settings app. You may have to look under the list of apps to find it. Then once you go to Google Settings, tap the Ads link, and then tap Opt Out of Internet-based ads. Now, but they still might track you as you're browsing around. So some people like to use a search engine that doesn't track anything. You know, because Google tracks you if you log in to the browser. They track your searching through that anyway. And so a lot of people use DuckDuckGo search engine. And DuckDuckGo search engine does not track your IP address, doesn't collect data, doesn't share information. And so that's like, so people that are really focused on privacy don't use Google. They use DuckDuckGo.
Ah.
You know, that's it. Now, if you've got a Windows phone, you can turn off personalized ads in the Windows phone. Go to the Microsoft opt-out page under personalized ads whenever I use my Microsoft account. Click off. But remember, you're going to be logged into your Windows account to do this, and make sure that you sign in with the same account that you use on your Windows phone. This also turns off personalized ads for the Internet Explorer and Windows 8. Now, unfortunately, the phone companies still have your MEID number, which is the hard programmed identifier in your phone, and they can track you using super cookies. And so Verizon, you know, was tracking people using super cookies until they were discovered, and now they say, as quote unquote, that they stopped using the practice, but nobody really knows for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. An idea of the week is something that I really, really do like. It's a way using Bluetooth beacons to help blind people navigate in difficult areas. You know, you've heard about they've got the eye beacon on the iPhone. When you walk into the iStore, it tracks where you are in the store, and it delivers personalized ads to you, whether you want them or not. So this was sort of a Bluetooth track, this iBeacon technology. Well, somebody got the idea that instead of delivering ads to you, you could actually have on a headset and they could deliver directional information to blind people or visually impaired people. I mean, that was a masterstroke of an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So navigating the London's underground is difficult for visually impaired. It's actually difficult for people that aren't impaired visually when you're there for the first time. So I've been around the underground, and there are a lot of options when you get down there. So there was an application called Wayfinder, Wayfinder, that's been developed by Us2, which is a company that's behind the video game Monument Valley. And they developed it in connection with the Royal London Society for Blind People's Youth Forum. And so they worked together, and they created messaging, audio messaging based on this Bluetooth beacon technology, and they started testing it out. They have a month long trial there in the Pimlico station. It's now underway with 16 beacons tracking users' smartphone and activating descriptive notes. Now it's very simple data. It gives valuable guidance, and I saw some videos of people using it, and the feedback from the blind or the visually impaired said this was really useful. Now the visually impaired person uses conductive earphones. In other words, they they can hear all the sounds around them.
Uh-huh.
And the sound is bone is conducted through the bone. You know, these bone conduction earphones, so that you can hear the voice directions, but it's not really covering
the
signal from all the sounds that are coming in.
If somebody was approaching, bearing down on you on a bus, you could hear the bus horn.
That's right. And this is very important because, you know, visually impaired people, sound is a key cue for them.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to block their sound, so they used this bone conduction earphone. So it's a small trial now, but Transport for London said that this could lead to further tests and shape how iBeacons are integrated into each station's physical architecture. I think this is a major development. I think it's a great, great use of technology. Now, Microsoft is expanding their Office 365 subscriptions. Already, they're giving Office 365 free to U.S. students.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really nice if you're a U.S. student, you get Office 365 free. You don't have to pay $65 a year, whatever it is, and you get it for free. Now, of course, you have to have an email address that proves you're from the school. either your email address. You have to say how long you're going to be in school, so you can't, like, be a student.
For 50 years.
For 50 years, no. So when you've been in school long enough, they cut it off. But it was only available for U.S. students. Now they're bringing free Office 365 subscriptions to students outside the U.S., so long as they live in one of the countries where the product is available. Now, it's a large list of countries, but not every country. It's not available in every country. Now, schools still have to buy a subscription for the staff and faculty, but once they do, the students and even the teachers can self-install for no charge by using a school-issued email address in the office, on the education website. Now, after signing up, they'll get access to the newest Office, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, Access, Publisher. They'll be able to install them on up to 5 computers and 5 phones or tablets. The account also comes with Office Online, and it also, get this, it comes with 1 terabyte of OneDrive storage, so users can go wild uploading anything they want without running out of space. We actually are an Office 365 school. All of our students at Stratford University get Office 365, and we use that pretty much across the board. But I have to say, we also use Google Apps a lot for a lot of our tracking. So we use both Microsoft and Google. That's a great feature. We're not using it currently in India, but I checked. India is on the list, so I think we're going to add this to our Indian campus, our campus at New Delhi, which will be a great, great item. Oh, the Apple Watch.
Yes, please.
Yeah, the Apple Watch is going to be launched officially April 24th. It's an iPhone-compatible watch. It's not called an iWatch. It's called an Apple Watch. Pre-orders will begin on April 10th. The cheapest one is around $350. The most expensive one is $17,000. It's an 18-karat gold edition. Mm. You can read emails, summon Siri, receive calls, track fitness goals. You get Facebook alerts, WeChat messages. Twitter trends can be beamed to your wrist. It's purported to have an 18-hour battery life, but people are questioning that. It will launch in U.S., U.K., Australia, Canada, China, France, Germany, Hong Kong, and Japan in April. More countries will be added soon after that. They're really aiming for the luxury market with this sapphire glass protected display. There are dozens of ways to interact with the watches, from receiving glancing notifications to feeling taptic feedback, so it, you know, vibrates a little bit, to calling Siri. The real advantage here is that your phone is not so distracted. You can put your phone away. You don't get all these notifications.
Right.
And you get a limited number of notifications, so you can actually have your phone with you, but it's not such a huge distraction. Now, it'll also work without the iPhone for selected apps like Apple Pay. It will handle it without the iPhone. It will handle Passbook. You can listen to music on the run. You can store about 250 songs on it. It's good for fitness tracking. And you know what? It also tells time.
No kidding.
That's like the big thing. So it's going to be so they're hoping that it's going to change the way people interact and use their iPhone. Listen, this show went by so fast. We love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We also would like you to go to the Stratford University website, Stratford.edu, and tell them that you heard about those programs on Tech Talk Radio.
If you tuned in later, would like to hear the show again in its entirety, tune in for our replay tomorrow at 2. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFMHD2 Manassas, WTLPFMHD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for at 12:30. Join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
And in sports today on Federal News Radio, the Wizards take on the Sacramento Kings at the Verizon Center this evening. Pregame at 6:45, the tip-off at 7 o'clock. It is going to be a rainy day today, but warm, heading up to a high of 60 degrees here in the nation's capital. Right out now, outside of our studios in Northwest D.C., it is cloudy, rainy, and 45 degrees at 10 o'clock.